Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll get an update from Jonathan Compass about potential Arc County payments this year for the 2014 crop and how they might come as Congress goes back to Washington, D.C. this week, under the constraints of something called sequester. And then as we wrap up our program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers as they finished up in Chicago at the CME Group September contract in the corn pit was 5.5 cents higher today. It settled at 355. December at 368.25, up 5.25. And the March at 379.75, up 5.25. May corn up 5.25. July up 5.5. December of next year, a nickel higher. Soy complex now bean futures up 13.5 cents in the nearby September, $8.90.75. The settlement price November at $8.79.25, up 12.75 in January at $8.82.25, 12.5 higher. March futures $8.84, up 13. May up 12.75. July up 12.75. November of next year up a dime. It settled at $8.69.75. Bean meal futures were down $1.90 in the September. October, though, at $3.09.60, up $1.50. Bean oil futures in the SEP up 41 at $26.85. October, $26.93, up 40 cents. Soft red winter wheat for the afternoon, up 7.5 cents as they closed out at $4.65.25 in the September. July of next year at $4.92.5, up 5.75. And the hard red at $5.10 even, 2.25 cents higher. Live cattle futures from the CME Group settled up the $3 limit at $143.47.5 in the October. The same limit higher, up 3 in the December at $145.77.5. September feeder cattle for the day at $204 for 100 pounds, up $2.65. October up $3.37.5 at $199.75. Lean hogs down 35 cents in the lead October at $68.80. December up 25 at this hour at $63.62.5. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. Let's check some of the outside markets at this hour as they're trading the energies. Crude oil for the day at $45.69, down 37 cents. Ethanol at $1.46.9. That's a penny and a half higher for the day. Gasoline in the October contract, the lead option for the wholesale price at $1.39.6, down 2.1 cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.58.9, that's 0.6 cents lower. And natural gas for the day at $2.69.8, up 4.3 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has gained 331 points, stands at around 16,450. The U.S. dollar is down 0.255 at 95.99. And gold futures on the day at $1,124.50 are up $3.60. Here's what the weather forecast is calling for in Urbana-Champaign tonight. Showers and thunderstorms, an 80% chance, a low of 68 degrees, a west-southwest wind at about 3 to 7 this evening. And then tomorrow, more showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 8 in the morning, mostly cloudy, a high of 79 degrees otherwise, light and variable winds out of the north at 5 to 9. Those in the morning, chance of rainfall, mostly overnight, of course, at 70%. And then Wednesday night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m., partly cloudy, a low of 56, north-northeast winds at 5 to 8, and Thursday, sunny skies and 79 degrees. Again, on a north-northeast wind, this time around at 6 miles an hour. Thursday night, cloudy and 59. Friday, sunny and 76. Friday night, cloudy and 53. And Saturday, sunny skies during the day and a high of 70 degrees. Saturday evening, partly cloudy, a low 50. We'll start the next week on Sunday with sunny skies and a high of 74. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 8th day of September 2015. Wayne Nelson joins us from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Wayne, it was kind of a nice day in the trade for Chicago. Futures in the bean pit garnered some steam. Why did they move higher?
Well, you know, we had a couple things going on. First off, our the export sales reporting system with two cargoes were sold to U.S. beans to unknown, and also two cargoes of corn sold to Mexico, which was a good thing. We also had the Chinese stock market, you know, hold its ground and gain a little bit, which allowed our Dow to be up here today, and the S&P's up along that way, and the crude oil down a little bit, and the dollar also backing off. We're down about 32 cents here on that. So all of those things, plus some sort of poor crop yield so far in the early beans and early corn, all of that put together with let's do a little short covering before the report on Friday, seemed to go for a pretty good day today.
I know that early crop yields are not indicative always of what we might find later, but what are you really hearing? What kind of yields have you heard?
Well, on the beans, we've heard anywhere from 31 to 58, and most of them lying in the mid-40s here right now on the early 3-2 beans that are coming out over here. Not an awful lot of yields to look at that way. We heard some 140-bushel corn just down south of Terre Haute on some sandy ground. They said that they felt it lost 10 to 15 bushel because of the no rain in August to what they thought it was going to be. So, you know, that is our biggest thing is I think that August and so far in September, from the stuff we died early because of lack of moisture.
So, were the bean yields off from expectations too? I know those are very difficult to get a handle on.
Yeah, I think that everybody thought that the beans would probably be about 5 to 7 bushels more than what they actually were. When they went to the field, I know that a couple of guys went out. They were very proud of that field all year. They'd done some walking in it. They thought it could have been 60 bushel beans, and it ended up being 50 bushel beans in the one field. And he said it took 3 beans to fill the same size or same area as 2 beans filled last year. They were much smaller because they just didn't. The pods were there and the bean count was there, but the beans were much smaller.
Friday morning, the United States Department of Agriculture will release both the crop production and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate reports at 11 o'clock a.m. in the morning, Central Time, noon in the Eastern Time Zone where you live. Are there expectations for things to change very much?
Not a lot, really. You know, the government was 46.9 on their bean yield last time. Of the 33 analysts that Reuters surveys come in with an average of a 46.1, so 0.8 of a bushel there. And, you know, the corn yield, they're looking at, you know, just down a bushel or two from what they're looking at there. So it's really not looking for that much of a change as far as that goes. So I don't know. And, of course, you know, basically, the 2-bushel difference, but everybody's in that 165 to 166 bracket on the corn here right now. I don't think in this report that we will be changing the harvested acres that much. That's where some people are looking for a change to happen in the October report, but generally they don't catch up with what the FSA office was saying until that October report on the acreage.
For those producers who would like to protect any gains that might come, and they would be protecting probably their crop insurance at these levels so that they might. Are there just things that they can do, they should do, that they might look at, and are they really worthwhile?
Well, I mean, if you feel that you're in a loss area to begin with, and you're going that at these price levels would make it, and you do think there's going to be a change in that, you know, you can look at buying either some calls or buying some futures here. Are they really worth it or not? You know, that's yet to be seen. I mean, if we would see a price rally happen from here and you're in one of the areas that you don't have the bushels that you'll end up getting to sell later, well, then it's going to be very, you know, possibly more the Indiana, Ohio people, more than the Illinois, Iowa people, that it might be worth, you know, looking at it, say, a 370 corn call.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Anything out of the livestock, by the way? I was noticing that there were some pretty good moves there. Why that?
Real good moves up. I think, you know, after the 3-day weekend, They were back in wanting to buy. It's a shortened slaughter week. So, of course, a lot of movement of meat out of the case in the grocery stores this week, being the big Labor Day cooking weekend. So I think that that was one of the things that inspired it today.
You have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Thanks.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Jonathan Kappas joins us. He's an ag policy specialist here in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Jonathan, farmers are really going to be strapped this marketing year, the harvest that is coming in for income, just because price and income and costs have all come to really a break-even point more than anything else. They will be wondering about the new farm program and some of its payments. What can you tell me about, in particular, our county?
Sure, and certainly we're seeing prices much lower, and obviously that's having an impact across the board at the bottom line in particular. So, you know, one of the things I always remember is that this farm program, the decisions were made back in March and April, for the 2014 crop year. But the way the programs are set up, payments don't happen until after October 1st. You got to remember we're using that market year average price, so you've got to go through the entire marketing year, which is going to end in August for corn, and then calculate those market average prices in order to determine the payment. And the statute actually says specifically no payments before October 1, and that just pushes it into the next fiscal year for the federal government. So that we won't see payments. We'll see the estimates coming out when we know the market year average price, and then payments will start if a payment is triggered, will start after October 1.
It does have to do with the budget. So let me back up just slightly, because there will be payments for the 2014 crop. Farmers probably remember that, but because they signed up for the programs after that crop had already been put in the bin, they may not. But it does have something yet to do with the budgets in some form and sequestration.
Yeah, and one quick reminder, even before we get to that, when you made the election decision back in the spring, you still had to sign up for the program in order to receive the payment. And so that, I believe that sign-up period is closing shortly. So farmers, if you have not signed up, you need to get into the FSA office right away and get that taken care of. And then, as you mentioned, starting October 1st, which is the new fiscal year for the federal government, that's when the payments go out. The issue that we're hearing about is this issue of sequestration, which goes all the way back to 2011, even before we were just starting this farm bill process, over that fight over the debt ceiling, and that ended up trying a super committee to cut spending, and then that failed, and then the sort of punishment for the super committee not working was this sequester, which is just an across-the-board cut in spending, estimated by OMB, and they figure out how much they've got to cut to meet the sequester. It's sort of been held in abeyance for a couple years under a budget deal that happened, and it's coming back now. And so the question that everybody's asking is sort of, is the sequester going to hit payments in these farm programs? My understanding, at this time we're not seeing anything too official, but my understanding is that the language in the contracts on the program says that these funds are subject to the potential for sequestration, in which case if sequester does come back into play, we would expect that a sequestration cut some small percentage, and small being relative, I guess, in terms of how that looks, but some percentage of the payment then will be reduced based on the sequester.
So if we start to hear, and Congress is back in Washington, D.C. this week, if we start to hear the battle cries and sequester beginning to be talked about, that will be when farmers need to think, hey, wait a second.
Yeah, I mean, they're back. They've got quite a bit on their plate here for September, so it's actually going to be a rather interesting September in Congress. Everything from the Iran deal, the Iran nuclear negotiation deal, to just funding the federal government. I mean, we don't have appropriations bills in place, so will they pass a continuing resolution, or will we be staring at another government shutdown come October 1st? So there's quite a bit there. Sequestration then falls within that larger mix. Will they push that back? How will they deal with that if they continue to fund the government through a continuing resolution, because there's no appropriations vehicle at this point that's gonna fund federal operations. And so we are in another kick the can down the road kind of situation, and we'll be watching to see what the sequester does in that case.
Safe range on the cuts looks like somewhere between 6% and 8%, I suppose.
Yeah, that's typically the numbers we've heard. I don't have anything final or official on what that might be, but you know, that's kind of where the sequester numbers typically fall out, and I think they're probably trying to sort that out now with the Office of Management and Budget in the administration, because that's all put on them to hit a sequester number.
All right. Well, we will watch Washington, D.C., and ask you to update us again later in the fall.
Always happy to talk to you. Should be an interesting couple weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Jonathan Kappas, of course, is an agricultural policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Well, as Jonathan Kappas mentioned, the Farm Bill Safety Net program sign-up is imminent. In fact, sign-up dates are less than 1 month away. Farmers have until September 30th to enroll in the Price Loss Coverage or Acreage Risk Coverage programs. That's PLC and ARC. USDA Farm Service Agency Director Val Dolcini says the process started about a year ago for farmers.
In the spring, we asked them then to elect one of those programs, and now we're doing the final E, which is enrollment. And so farmers are coming in around the nation to sign their contracts, designating the election that they had made earlier in the year, whether it was ARC or ARC County or the PLC program. And that process will continue until the 30th of September. That's the deadline. And those choices will last for the life of this farm bill, which will expire in 2018.
Dairy producers also have until the 30th day of September to sign up for the Dairy Margin Protection Program, or MPP, which replaces the old dairy program. This year is the second sign-up for the program, in which near 25,000 dairy farmers signed up for last year.
We're in the process of doing that for the 2016 year, and that will end on the 30th of September. So dairies that are interested in learning more about the Margin Protection Program should certainly call their local FSA county office. They can also visit our website, which is fsa.usda.gov, and there are a variety of fact sheets and other helpful tools that will educate folks more both about the Margin Protection Program as well as a variety of other FSA programs.
For more information, go to fsa.usda.gov. There are a couple of other items in the agricultural news. Apparently, the United States is going to hold China accountable for exchange rate fluctuations. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew says the U.S. will hold China accountable for exchange rate fluctuations that recently sent global financial markets into turmoil. Lew told CNBC China has to understand there's an economic and a political reality to things like exchange rates. And China's surprise move in early August to let its currency float based on market forces caused a sharp drop in its value. That led to a backlash of concern from U.S. lawmakers. China's president will visit Washington later this month. That amid the fresh concerns about Beijing's recent policy moves. Some market analysts say recent moves by China could lead the Federal Reserve not to raise interest rates later this year. On a related note, China continues to be the top importer of U.S. distillers' dried grains with solubles and sorghum despite the current uncertainties in the Chinese and the international grain market. The U.S. Grains Council says factors contributing to the volatility in the Chinese market include a very large corn harvest in China. That's set to begin soon, a new regulatory system for grain importers, and an ongoing discussion about the support price of corn in China. Even with these potential changes, vessels of U.S. sorghum and DDGSs continue to arrive in China. As of the 27th day of August, China had imported 8.3 million metric tons of U.S. sorghum. That's up 4 million tons over the same period last year, in addition to the 4.2 million tons of U.S. DDGs for the January through July 2015 time period, up 20% from the same period last year. And finally today, the U.S. EIA, the Energy Information Administration, reports the price of gas the week before Labor Day reached its lowest level since 2004. The department reports the U.S. average retail price of regular gasoline was $2.51 a gallon. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's keep our attention on the crude oil market this time, and we'll talk with Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. Thanks, Stephen, for joining us on this Tuesday afternoon. Tell me about the price of crude oil and how it's been moving over the last month or so.
Well, we've had a lot of excitement. Over a week ago, we saw this market move up as much as $10 in the span of 3 days. It was at $39 per barrel, and it moved all the way up to about $49 before breaking $5. A lot of volatility, a lot of it probably connected to not only the stock market, which had broken the Monday prior to that Thursday, but also I think a lot of the computer programs. And also one has to think, was there some movement of assets from financial assets into commodities?
Is there time yet, and I know that producers had thought about this, but for them to lock in prices for their fall needs?
Well, one thing you want to look at, I think, in terms of making that judgment is not just the flat price, but the relative price of heating oil diesel to your corn price. And I think at these levels, it is getting attractive. It's at one of its lowest levels. So basically, you're able to utilize a lot more of your bushels of corn in terms of making fuel oil purchases. Now, certainly we can make the case for probably prices of heating oil going lower, but I also probably could see, if anything, diesel probably holding in there better than either crude or gasoline. We saw that during the summer in terms of the gasoline gaining on crude, and we certainly could see it if the winter fears possibly start to kick in a little bit earlier than expected as well.
Are your expectations for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates? And if they do, would that make much of a difference for the energy sector?
Well, my own feeling is the Federal Reserve has pretty much telegraphed what they're, well, probably intend to do. If anything, it will probably be a modest increase, which I doubt will have much impact in terms of the underlying demand side. The other factor probably is that going forward, they're not going to be quick to move up rates and probably will be somewhat reserved in making any further moves as well.
All right. Anything else that we need to talk about before I let you go?
Well, certainly the IEA report, International Energy Agency report, is coming out on September 11th, just as our crop report will be coming out. So a lot of things going on that Friday, and then Monday the OPEC monthly report will be coming out. And those are some big highlights for the market in terms of giving us a good gauge for supply demand.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations, and we do that in its entirety.
It's National Rice Pudding Day. While rice puddings are found in nearly every area of the world, rice was first cultivated in Asia. On this day in agricultural history in 1842, the U.S.-Canada border was defined by the Webster-Ashburton Treaty. The treaty also had clauses for extradition as well as prevention of African slave trade. In 1910, Alva Fisher of Chicago, Illinois, patented the electric washing machine. U.S. electric washing machine sales reached 913,000 units in 1928. By the way, the first laundromat in the U.S. was in Fort Worth, Texas in 1934. previous to the electric washing machine, washing machines were cranked by hand or the wash was scrubbed on a washboard. The scrub board was invented in 1797. In 1911, John Gates died. Gates was an inventor, promoter, and barbed wire manufacturer. He discovered a market for wire fencing on the Western Plains, and he helped convince ranchers to adopt barbed wire. Ultimately, he organized the American Steel and Wire Company. Incidentally, one of the first patents in the U.S. for barbed wire went to Joseph Glidden of DeKalb, Illinois. He made modifications to earlier versions. Glidden's wire, named the Winner, was produced by the Barb Fence Company in DeKalb. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Find us online at willag.org. This is the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon, the first trading day of the week. Don Day is here. He's meteorologist from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for being with us. We're closing in on harvest time. It's been really hot, but the next 24 hours, I guess, are going to be really transitional.
Well, they are. We are looking at a fairly typical September weather pattern in the sense that we're starting to see some things happening with the jet stream, things that are showing us signs that we are definitely into late summer. But speaking of late summer, we're certainly seeing those warm temperatures developing across the Corn Belt and Midwest here. And it's been a long stretch of heat. We're getting a lot of heat units accumulated, and that trend will continue for a little bit longer before we start to see some changes in the weather pattern across North America towards the middle to the end of next week, which is going to bring some cooler weather our way. We're going to see a couple of cold fronts, one late this week and another one towards late next week.
You know, I was thinking going from 95 to 80 was a transition, but apparently you've got some cooler temperatures in mind in the next week and a half?
Yeah, we do. We've got a cold front that's going to be coming through as we get on into Wednesday night and Thursday, so that'll bring some cooler air to the Corn Belt Midwest. Especially you're going to notice this as you get into Friday. Temperatures are going to be down considerably, and cool, dry air behind that system will provide us with several days of sunny, dry conditions. Temperatures are then going to warm up first half of next week. Late next week will be the next cold front.
What kind of evening lows will we have during that period?
Well, we should be able to see temperatures getting back down to the 50s at night. There might even be some 40s in places in the Midwest Friday night and Saturday morning.
All right. Anything else in the United States or around the planet that we should be keeping track of?
Well, there's going to be some increase in tropical activity. We're going to see actually a little bit of rain get into southern and central California from what's now Hurricane Linda off the west coast of Mexico. Watch the Gulf of Mexico. We've got two areas, one west of Florida and another area that could develop near Texas later this week and next week.
And do you suppose, and I know this is really early, that either of those, and sometimes it just depends, will route through the beginning of the harvest season and drop rain in either the eastern or the western Corn Belt?
Well, I would say at the moment, no. The pattern that we see is going to probably keep the tropical activity into those southern states.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Don. We appreciate you taking time each week with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. If you'd like to hear the whole of our program, you can do that again in not too short a distance of time, by about 15 after the hour of 3 o'clock Central Time, up on our website at willag.org. You have a really good Tuesday afternoon, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow right here from Illinois Public Media.